thank you very much for coming this early in the morning, and delighted to have you here. My name is Lauren Hughes, and I'm a third-year medical student at the University of Iowa, and I'll be starting first this morning talking about the role of health professions training programs in community health centers, and then in turn we'll introduce the three fellow panelists this morning. I first became interested in community health centers when I was a volunteer at one for a full year at AmeriCorps 5 years ago in California. And this past year I was able to take the year off and complete my master's in public health and health policy at George Washington here in D.C. And while there, I was able to complete my practicum at the National Association of Community Health Centers working on this issue. So I have kind of seen the practice side and the policy side, and have really come to enjoy health centers and their mission, the population it serves, and the overall design. And for those that are not necessarily familiar with health centers, they are nonprofit, locally owned primary health care clinics that primarily serve low-income and medically underserved populations. By law, they have to be located in HPSAs, or health professional shortage areas. One such designation that the Department of Health and Human Services gives to prioritize where we need health care personnel, whether it's mental health care, dentists, physicians, etc. The health centers focus on primary and preventive health care, as well as providing ancillary services, which could include things like transportation assistance and translation services. Over 16 million patients are served on an annual basis at nearly 1,000 health centers. But each of these centers may have multiple sites, including mobile mammography vans, public outreach, or just several satellite sites in general. And overall, there are, in total, about 6,000 delivery sites. Health centers are quite unique in their structure in that by mandate through the Public Health Service Act, over half of the members of the board of directors have to be patients that the clinic serves. So you're always ensuring that the health center is responsive to local needs. They're open to all patients regardless of insurance status and ability to pay. The patient mix is also fairly unique in that two-thirds are of racial and ethnic minorities and half live in rural settings. And health centers that meet a certain set of criteria, including half the board has to be the patients, etc., are termed federally qualified health centers and receive a portion of their operating funds from the federal government. As well, they receive funding from nonprofit organizations from cities and states in which they operate and via private donations. The health centers not only depend on federal support for clinic operations, but also to fund and staff their health centers, whether it's through trainees or for the staff members themselves. And the Congress this year faces several tough decisions, and one of them is a reauthorization of these health professional training programs, including one that's fairly well known, the National Health Service Corps. So NAHC, again, the National Association of Community Health Centers, wanted to survey its membership to evaluate the challenges, the benefits, and the implications that health centers face when implementing health professional training programs in their centers. The larger context, however, is why we studied this in particular last year, kind of did a cross-sectional look at the status of health professions training programs in health centers, is in light of the looming primary care workforce shortage that is being predicted by AAMC, the American Association of Medical Colleges, and several specialty organizations. There are several reasons contributing to this shortage projection, including increasing student debt load, the cost to go to medical school, perceived income potential that's lower and is lower for primary care professionals compared to specialty organizations. Students entering are not necessarily as willing to work longer hours that our predecessors have done. There's, unfortunately, among some students, an inferiority myth that if you're not talented enough, you're not savvy enough, you go into primary care as opposed to becoming an ear, nose, or throat doctor, which I, being someone who's interested in primary care and preventive medicine, I like to think of it as the other way around. And some medical schools just simply emphasize research over primary care. Our reimbursement system right now favors procedures over prevention. And a lot of my kind of personally reflect on my experience in medical school. I feel like I'm being trained to be a Band-Aid, where it's just far too late at that point in time. We need to be focusing on resources earlier and preventing disease before it happens. There are a lot of scholarships and loan repayment options on the state and national level, but they're not. Some schools may not be disseminating the word about those opportunities. We're seeing a trend of feminization of the workforce, and personally, I think this is a fantastic trend, but for a variety of reasons, women do not work as many hours as do our male colleagues, and that does contribute to workforce shortages. There's decreased federal support for pipeline programs, and I will describe these acronyms here in the next couple of slides, but decreased funding for getting students earlier more interested in health professionals' careers. And as well, there are some articles out there that are hypothesizing that perhaps we're not selecting the right students to go into primary care. We know from an epidemiological perspective what students might be more willing or more interested to go into primary care, and we're not selecting those at the onset of medical school. In this survey of the health centers, we wanted to know, beyond the traditional health professions such as allopathic, osteopathic medical students, resident physicians, are they hosting these other types of health professions, including LVN, LPN nurses, other nurse fields, physician assistants, dentists, and even clinical social workers and podiatrists. The online survey instrument was distributed internally to all of the ED CEOs last fall. After all duplicate surveys were eliminated, we had a convenient sample rate of 35%, which just happened to be nationally representative, which was also very, very convenient. 181 of the centers that responded were rural, federally qualified health centers, and 149 were urban. This is a cross-sectional look of all of our respondents. As you can see, 42% of the programs that responded are participating in residency training programs, half in medical student rotations, and nearly 50% in other training programs, which I'll describe more on the next slide. The other, the 28% that participate in SEARCH, SEARCH stands for Student Resident Experiences and Rotations in Community Health, that is a federal funding stream for graduate students to pursue community service in health professional shortage areas. HCOP and COE stand for Health Careers Opportunities Program and Centers of Excellence, which are funded through the Public Health Service Act with the overall goal of increasing representation of minorities and disadvantaged students in the workplace. HCOP focuses on recruitment and the K-12 pipeline to get students interested a lot earlier, and COE, the Centers of Excellence, focus on mentoring students once they're in their medical or other health professions training. So the health centers, you know, remember that 50%, nearly 50% that was participating in other programs, they are doing such a wide variety of training, including high school job shadowing, dental assistants, pharmacy externships, dietetic internships, even phlebotomy students and health administration students. So the health centers are, depending on who they are quite busy working with students. AHEC is another one of those acronyms that stands for Area Health Education Centers, also funded through the Public Health Service Act with a goal of creating academic and community health partnerships that are also trying to work on supply and distribution of health professionals to areas of greatest need. Of those that responded to this question, slightly over 50% are participating, and 114 centers are not currently doing so. We asked the health centers to characterize their participation in three ways. The first is on this slide, by level of activity. It's important to keep in mind that on the right-hand side, the response count it just depends on each of the individual categories. The way the survey was designed, not every person responding had answered every single question, and so they typically only respond to those that were applicable to them. So for the allopathic medical students, the MD medical students, of the 181 that responded to this, half of the health centers are currently participating in hosting allopathic medical students. You can also see that resident physician and nurse practitioner, as well as RNs, physician assistants, are also quite popular. Podiatry, psychology, clinical social workers, and public health students in general are not necessarily ones that are planned by health centers at this time. We also asked them to characterize their participation in terms of the number of students or residents they host per year, as well as the average length of time that they're there at the center. Most frequently, health centers have three or more of medical students a year, resident physicians, as well as RNs, PAs, and the LDN and LPN nurses. An overwhelming majority of the average length of stay of a student, whatever the profession is 3 months or less at the health center. Another question that's very important is who is paying for these experiences? When it comes to community health centers having a limited fund of, sum of money, pot of money, devoted to patient care, it becomes a concern if a lot of these resources are devoted to other areas, including training students. So we asked the health centers to characterize their funding for student resident placement and health professions training programs across these five different payer sources, including university or school, hospital, state funding, private foundation or grant, or the individual health center. Nearly a majority of the time, the most frequent response was no funding for each of the first four payers. So it kind of leaves you, well, who is actually paying for these experiences? And we found that the health centers are picking up a great deal of various aspects of the cost. We saw a lot more spread in this data when we took a look at the CHC level. You can see that for student resident stipends, for example, nearly 70% are not providing any funding, a quarter are providing some funding. And we did not ask the health center to quantify what some funding is, but just to kind of degrade that based on their own experience. In terms of, you can see the ancillary service costs, lab, x-ray, and pharmacy, 65 of the centers are picking up all of the costs associated with those training of students. With mentoring and faculty costs, for 76 of the centers, they are chipping in some money for those that are spending time working with students. For those that are participating in training students, we wanted to know what benefits they found from doing so. And not surprisingly, the top four reasons were improved recruitment and retention of health professionals, as well as a chance to influence students' future practice choices in community-based settings, and affiliation with an academic health center or teaching hospital or university that sometimes would allow for a faculty cross-exchange. And also, again, not surprisingly, in terms of the top three challenges that health centers face when hosting students include lost productivity of center staff while teaching and cost and space. And both of these are, are based on a 1-4 scale, with 4 being the most important and 1 being the least important. For the 35 centers of the 330 that responded that they're not taking part whatsoever in any health professions training, the number one reason was the lack of a formal relationship with an area school in our teaching hospital. For some of these health centers, they're located, they have two PAs, for example. One center in Utah, I'm thinking of, has two PAs that serves, 200 plus square miles, and they're the only providers for that region. So geographically speaking, they're far from medical school, so it might make that relationship impossible. And some of these centers formerly had relationships that respond to this question with academic centers, but that has been fallen by the wayside with personnel changes. Despite the challenges of hosting students, whether they had before or are currently doing so, it was encouraging to see that the last 5 years, nearly 70% of health centers that had had a student transfer center then went on to hire that person. And then you have someone who's familiar with the mission of the center, familiar with how they work. And each center is very different, but globally there are a set of principles that all health centers ascribe to. So in conclusion, we were encouraged to see that a majority of health centers are currently participating in quite a few programs, and that improved recruitment and retention opportunity to influence students' practice choices kind of headline the list of why they're continuing to do so. But lost productivity of staff, cost, and space are three challenges that must be addressed. In hosting students, we do not want the health center to be detracted from its mission of taking care of patients. And again, the 70% of the centers that have hired a health professional to train in their center within the past 5 years. Thank you very much. And might have time if there's maybe one or two questions before we move on to the next person. So. There are several ways you could look at if the state has an AHEC, Area Health Education Center, their purpose is to form that linkage and to work with them. Iowa, my own state, we just got funded to create one. We were one of the last holdouts for whatever reason. We do not have an AHEC, but that's a good that's a good interaction. And also, it just comes down to, you know, the school faculty reaching out and showing an interest, but there really needs to be a focus on a true exchange. You know, a lot of times the health centers express frustration of having students come and then not really having that reciprocity of, you know, faculty support or staff or the school really putting forth those resources. When, for me, when I've trained in the community, it is an exceptionally valuable public health and medical experience that I cannot get at an academic hospital. I can't get anywhere else. And so there, if the schools are really interested in having students experience that, they really need to be willing to join that partnership and put forward financial, financial resources and or space resources that does not detract from the mission of the health center. But those AHECs are very important. And some too, you know, some professors or, you know, the family medicine departments, for example, primary care departments, they've already had, they might be practicing there or adjunct faculty as well. And also to make the staff members at the health center as adjunct faculty and give them that recognition at the medical school level also helps as well. So. Thank you very much. I'll move on to the next presentation. Loading here. Penelope Boffman is a public health doctoral student in population epidemiology and biostatistics at West Virginia University Department of Community Medicine. Her research interests include injury control and prevention, and she's currently part of the West Virginia Coalition Against Domestic Violence.